It's Window Nation's semi-annual sale, and it's a big deal. Right now, get 50% off all windows along with no interest for 5 years plus bonus savings when you schedule a consult today. If your windows leak, get foggy or hot, or you're paying high utility bills, that's a big deal. With Window Nation's semi-annual sale, you can replace your windows and save a big deal too. Schedule a no-obligation in-home estimate now. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
94 WIP FM HD1 Philadelphia from the Tasty Cake Studios. This is BGN Radio on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Oh, what's going on? It is episode number, I don't know what we're on with the WIP show, but it's almost been a year. We're getting close to that. It's been a year since we've come over. We are ecstatic, not only because of that, because, training camp's coming up. So we finally made it through here. John Barcher, James Seltzer, Brandon Lee Gouton, all hanging out with you. James, where have you been, man? You're here.
I know. I was away. I was in Portland, man. First of all, just to echo what you said, best decision we ever made to come over here.
Absolutely.
Amazing. We're so happy. I was in Portland, man. So, like, obviously, you know, super left coast, relaxed, very much my style, as you guys know. I'm very relaxed and
hanging out
chill.
In Portland, drinking all the beers.
I did do that, and it was pretty great. Everybody else is working a lot of beers. That was the thing.
Everybody's working 14-hour days. Sipping on beer flights.
That's the funnest fact I learned about Portland while I was out there is that every single restaurant actually has its own brewery.
that's
literally
very important.
Everyone. It was amazing.
Editor-in-chief of BleedingGreenNation.com, Mr. Brandon Lee Gouton. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm ready for training camp.
And like we said, we have officially made it through the dead zone. Hey. I can't believe that it actually happened because I just figured we'd be having to talk about, all the sorts of nonsense that you have to push through July. But honestly, it hasn't been that bad for some reason. Like there has been things that have been coming up more or less from the division rivals of the Eagles, like Washington and Dallas. And we'll get into those for sure. But BLG, I want to start with you. What is it that needs to happen in training camp, I guess, for you, for Eagles fans? Who needs to really step up and show that they need to be on this football squad here?
I mean, I hate to start with the obvious, but it has to be Carson. We have to go with Carson right away because, you know, there were times this spring, and you saw it, John, where we're watching Carson and it's like, man, like, you know, I don't want to overreact to this too much. It's only spring practice. It's only OTAs. It's not like he's going to go to this mechanics coach in the offseason. All of a sudden, like, he's going to be this perfect finished product heading into year two. But there were some times there, the accuracy, where, you know, they'd be doing a red zone drill and he'd go like 2 of 11. And, like, you know, that's, again,
not great, Bob.
The season isn't over, but, like, that's not what we're looking for. So I want to see him come out in training camp because he did end mini camp really strong. He was throwing a lot more passes with accuracy. So I think to see him kind of pick up from mini camp where he is there and looking strong in this training camp and taking control of the team, I think that's what I want to see right away.
I'm curious to see how many people, if he does struggle, say it doesn't matter. It's just preseason. It's just training camp. Because I feel like that happens a lot, no matter what. But we all pay attention, right? Like, that's the kind of, we're still there. I've never seen so many people say, well, it's just OTAs. It's like we continuously kick the can on down. Well, it's just summer practices. It's just the preseason. It's like, no, these things matter building up to it. And James, do you have anybody that's on the top of your head that you're like, all right, this guy needs to have a very strong training camp this season?
I do. Great point, though, by the way, because I will admit I'm very guilty of the OTA thing. And I'm like, they're not in pads. It doesn't count.
And I that's do, okay. I think that's the only thing
that
you can say.
But I think that to think that once they get into pads and you know they're actually playing live football for at least a closer amalgamation of real football, then I think you start to have to take it more seriously. But for me, when you said the question, Nelson Agholor was the first name that came to my mind. As you guys know, I'm less of a less bullish, at least on a potential turnaround. But to kind of echo what BLG is saying, like I think Wentz is the clear one, but on the defensive side, I want to see Fletcher Cox, man. I want to see him come in like a beast, ready to go, ready to show us.
A little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, because he should have a chip on his shoulder because he didn't play that well last year. And he didn't show up for, you know, OTAs in the long run. Not a big deal, but he got some crap for it. And at the time, you know, whether deserved or not, I just hope that all this, the $100 million man, all that type of stuff, I want to see a fire lit under Fletcher Cox.
Absolutely. I think that's... And again, that's more or less for his contract. And it's the same way that I think we feel about Vinny Curry as well. That's one I used on the podcast at BGN_radio. Jack Fritz, who's producing our show right now, is on that one too. We were kind of going through a lot of that stuff. I don't necessarily, you know, that's where I always kind of have that conflict of like, he's still going to be a dominant force no matter how much he's getting paid. Whether that's, I mean, do we feel better if it's $50 million over his career or over his length of the contract yes. over it's 100? No. You feel the same exact. But you're right. No, he needs to have, I think people just need to see the sack numbers. And that's not to excuse a lot of the different stuff that, you know, we saw over there. There is this weird narrative as the offseason progressed that, oh, he got double teamed all the time. He wasn't getting double teamed all the time. Kyle Long stood him up against the Bears, and that was early. Like there was a lot of one-on-one opportunities where, you know, a lot of the concentration was just directly on him, and he lost those battles. I don't know how much influence that Timmy Jernigan is going to have in that situation. Like, are they just going to go, okay, we're just going to double up on one of these guys and pick our poison for whatever kind of thing that we're running here? But how much impact does Timmy Jernigan have on Fletcher Cox's, you know, ability this year?
It's a great question, especially because a healthy Benny Logan, we saw the difference that generally made for Fletcher. And obviously Tim Jernigan, a better pass rusher than Benny Logan. So I think they could have a real dominant force coming from the inside. One interesting thing you said, and I totally agree, John, is I think that the pressure and the discussion about it, missing OTAs, all that stuff all comes from the fact that he got signed a $100 million contract. But at the same time, I think he still did get signed to a $100 million contract. And whether he likes it or not, whether we like it or not, that is something that is going to be associated with him and is something that demands production. So while I agree with you that it shouldn't matter in theory, at BLG, I think ultimately it is going to matter that, you know, he makes $100 million.
I would disagree, James, that he looked bad last year. I don't think
I don't think bad. I'm sorry. Yeah, did I say that?
You were like,
way to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a stern letter.
Disappointed.
He wasn't elite. And the Eagles need him to be an elite difference maker with that contract. Like, this needs to be a guy who takes over games at some points. And he did at times, or more so earlier on. Like the Pittsburgh game really stands out to me as a game where he kind of just dominated the interior of that line. And Big Ben didn't have a chance all day. Like, they need him to do that more often. He needs to take over. And I don't think it's just Timothy Jernigan.
By the end, we're just going to have so many different versions of Tim by the end of the season.
Oh, I can't wait.
I don't think it's just him making the difference there, although I do think that will be big because, as I've pointed out many times, look, Timmy Jernigan is 3 years younger than Benny Logan, mm-hmm. and he's played 16 less games than Benny Logan, and he has like twice the career sacks of Benny Logan. So there's reason to believe he'll be better as a pass rusher. But again, it's not just him. It's Brandon Graham coming back, and I think, you know, he had an underrated year last year because he led the NFL in total pressures in terms of combined sacks and hurries and hits. And Derek Barnett, who we saw who looked awesome, who was another player to really watch in training camp when the pad goes on. But if he can be awesome and you have Vinny in this rotation, I don't think it's just Jernigan coming in here. I think all those guys are really going to help take the pressure off of Cox.
888-729-9494. What are you looking forward to, and who needs to step up for you, I guess, in training camp? And what do you need to see to kind of make you feel a little bit better about heading into the season? I've got some names on the defensive side of the ball as well, because I think there's one rookie in particular who you absolutely has to stand out over training camp and over the preseason. But I want to go to my main man, David, in Carbondale, Illinois. David, what's happening, man? Good to hear from you.
Hello. And again, not just in Carbondale, but still in Los Angeles.
You're still in L.A. I can't see you're in, why do you say you're in Illinois when you're clearly in L.A.?
I'm guessing it's in the system that way.
Oh, it would be.
I'm in the system.
Yep.
Again,
a little inside baseball there.
Yeah, I guess so. So, appreciate you guys taking my call. I have two questions pertaining to the offensive line, both short term and long term. Short term, we know Peters probably won't be here past next year. And looking at the offensive line and the guys that Doug likes and that they brought in, I heard BLG talk about Ike Simalo.
let's get the Ike train going. Yeah. Jeez, yeah.
Right. And how he kind of had that a little bit of the Mahler mentality to him. We know Kelsey is just the most athletic center that is probably playing right now. And then Brandon Brooks is gigantic. Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson both are huge. They're both like 6'5", yeah. 330 pounds. Like they're maulers. Are we seeing our offensive line like kind of move toward that type of rogue grading, you know, dominant, you know, like big dudes just kicking the crap out of
big people beat up little people?
Sounds like a familiar mentality.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. No,
but
yeah.
It's funny though. But the difference between like a Chip Kelly offensive line maybe and this one would be, you know, Chip generally, at least in theory, well, first of all, just neglecting the offensive line entirely, and then secondly, right. You know, guys who are more athletic or at least you know who would fit that kind of mold. And I, as you pointed out, you know, you do see Brandon Brooks, a bigger guy, coming in here, kind of a mauler. Mm-hmm. Somalo's not like really big. He's not huge, but he does have like that really physical, nasty mentality. I remember
real strong
and athletic too. Yeah.
Again, it's non-contact, but there was a play in like, I think it was one of the first days of OTAs and he kind of just,
Vinny Curry toss.
There you go. He just like tossed Vinny Curry. It was awesome. I love to see it. So I do think they're getting physical and you have to give a lot of credit here to Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach as well.
Yeah, for sure. Was that toss payback for not living up to his contract last year?
From all of Eagledom, right? Like that was from all of us, Vinny.
Yeah, David, we appreciate the call, man. Enjoy L.A. I'm sure it's just as hot as it is out there right now. But that's the thing that I'm just still kind of blown away by, too, is just, you know, there are so many different – when's the last – we have complained about all offensive line depth for 5 years.
Guardy McBeef.
And now we're just kind of like – now there's too many. There's too many freaking offensive linemen on this football team. And that's the battle that I think it's obvious and everybody's waiting for to see. It's like, all right, well, who's going to start at left guard? You know, I mean, I know that Chance Warmack sounds like an interesting thing, but I don't think he's going to make this football team. I really don't. If they're keeping Jason Kelsey, there's no way that Chance Warmack is making this football
team. Wow. John, that's a really interesting. I haven't even thought about Warmack as a potential cut. casualty type person. I agree. I think Isaac Simalo is going to win that job. I think A, they really like him, and B, everything we've seen from him has been impressive, you know, especially for his age and you know, experience level. I've been really, really impressed with Ike Simalo. John, I think the point you make though, and Warmack, interesting that edge of the fact that we're even discussing Warmack as a potential non-roster guy is awesome. You know, the fact that we have this kind of depth here, how many times have we talked about the issues with the offensive line? And a few years ago, you know, where literally we lost every single player on the offensive line over the course of the season and the damage that did. I think, you know, offensive line depth may be one of the more underrated needs to have in the NFL right now.
Yeah. And that's kind of, it should give you as many concerns as I've had about, like, well, is Jason Peters going to actually last 16 games? And would they switch Lane Johnson over there? I actually think there's enough beef through the middle that, sure, one of those places might be a little weaker, but it's not going to be detrimental.
I agree.
Even if Jason Kelsey goes down, then you slide over Ike. Or if Ike's not starting at left guard for whatever reason, then you put him at center. That's a little more active, strong beef that's going through there. I honestly think that, like, that's where I'm just so confused on all that. No disrespect to Jason Kelsey at all, because he's awesome. I love him. He's great. But that just makes so much more sense to me if you have a guy like Warmack playing left guard, say Amalu playing center, or Wisniewski playing guard, or however you want. It's mind-boggling to me that the road grading part, the thing that if you're going to do running back by committee, and if you wanted to make it successful, then you have to have one of the best offensive run lines in the land. And I don't think they have that with Jason Kelce, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Well, especially because the upside is that. You know, it really is. It's a great point, but I love all the beef talk as well. A lot of beef thrown in there. But also just one more point to David's point. That right side of the line could be special. Like Brooks and Johnson over there, like that could be one of the biggest strengths of this football team, and that's something to be excited about.
Absolutely. Let's go to Joe in Northern Liberties. Joe, what's going on, bud? You're on BGN Radio.
What's up, guys?
What's happening, man?
Just wanted to bring in the point. I would love to see the statistics. I don't know if it's out there anywhere, but the statistics for QB release time against the Eagles defense over the year, because we beat up our defensive line, especially Fletcher Cox. But when you look at, like, even just the 2017 player ranking, they still have Fletcher Cox up there. He still disrupts it. Yeah, maybe not perfect play all the time, but he's still getting to the quarterback or QB pressures. But the release time, I think they figured out if you release the ball in less than 2 seconds, our corners will not be able to keep up with any wide receiver. So it's just an increase. You look at, like, that Steelers game, you had Ben Roethlisberger just kind of stunned by how quickly we were getting to him.
Oh, yeah.
I think the next game, somebody figured it out, said, you know what, just throw the ball faster. Nobody's going to be able to keep up with the wide receivers. Just get rid of it.
And, Joe, I think that kind of happened over time. Like, you saw the main differences between, like, what Pittsburgh ran and then Green Bay ran when everybody's like, okay, I think Green Bay hasn't won in 6 games. In 6 weeks, they haven't won. All of a sudden, we're just going to attack them short and quick. We're going to go, that's their strength on this defense. We don't have Antonio Brown. We don't need a long time for things to develop. And they just went for it. That's all they did. They carved him up, they cut him apart, and that's it.
What was it? I think Beasley had like 9 or 10 catches against us or something, because it's just a slot, like little slot passes. Nobody could keep up with them. And so, well, how effective can your D-line be if the D-line has literally 2 seconds or less to get to the quarterback?
Well, that's a great point, Joe. And that's why you can't have Malcolm Jenkins covering Beasley,
because
that's what happens, you know. And when you have a lot of that going through, which leads me to my guy and why this needs to get solidified in the summer. I want him the starter week one of preseason. Rasul Douglas needs to have the strongest summer out of all of them. And it's not to put pressure on him. It's not to be like, hey man, you got to be the guy. Patrick Robinson does not help this football team for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. He needs to be the third corner on this football team. Rasul Douglas is my guy, BLJ.
I think that's a very fair call and a very fair point. When I think about how good this Eagles pass rush could be, and I'm very bullish on it, I also think, well, you know, we did see how it got countered in a Packers game, you know, where you have a lot of the short passing game trying to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands, kind of neutralize that pass rush. But I think for as many concerns as we have about these Eagles cornerbacks, the one good thing, at least in theory, that they should be good at is being feisty at the line of scrimmage. Like, look at Jalen Mills, look at Rasul Douglas. Like, those guys, they're really aggressive. That's where they're going to win. The concern with those guys is down the field. Like, they can't cover down the field because they don't have that deep speed. So if teams are going to play into this short passing game, I think those guys are aggressive, and they're going to jump on certain plays too, and that could turn into interceptions or big plays for the defense.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. We've talked about that a ton, the importance of just pressure and what that does. The John Ritchie line of it's called the secondary for a reason, you know, secondary, you know, the pass rush comes first. But I think you could just as easily put Jalen Mills there, right? Like, it's the combo, really, because, I mean, Jalen Mills is all of a sudden the number one cornerback on this team, you know, ipso facto. And it's like, exactly. It's like, what have we seen this guy do in the NFL to make us feel confident that he can cover a Dez Bryant or a Terrell Pryor or Odell Beckham Jr. or whatever it is? So I think, you know, just as much for me, and I totally agree, I think Rasul Douglas, especially from the rookie class, probably the most important that he shows up immediately. But I think you could just make the case it's just as important for Jalen. And just as, you know, we don't know for Jalen Mills as well.
And, you know, Jack Fritz, who's producing our show right now, actually said on the podcast, like, you were just saying, it just needs to be serviceable. All that 0.5 talk of just, like, that half a second that they just need to cover, it just needs to be serviceable. It doesn't need to be the best secondary in the world, which I think a lot of Eagles fans are, it's either one way or the other here.
Yeah, just don't be the worst that we've ever seen. And that's all I'm asking for. Don't be Bradley Fletcher. Don't be these guys. Just keep everything in front of you. Let the safeties do their job. Don't get beat deep. Don't have Malcolm Jenkins in the slot, and we can go from there, and we'll be okay. I think people are a little bit too concerned about the corners. I think they're going to be okay this year.
Yeah, and it's just, it's amazing that throughout the run of all of these different starters and all this different stuff here, that's what we've been asking for 7 years. Don't be terrible. And it's amazing that we've had the same conversation with the wide receivers, and that's just been in the short-term thing. But literally, the bar is be better than Bradley Fletcher, and it's amazing that the Eagles have not hit that bar yet.
It is be the lowest better. Bar ever in anything. Like,
yeah, it's so easy to replace. Maybe it's not. Let's go to Bob in Marlton real quick. Bob, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Great, guys. I think we've got the players to make a run. I'm not worried about who we've brought in. Now, whether or not they gel and come together, that's something else, mm-hmm. whether they perform. But to me, the biggest worry is the coach. I mean, he was my biggest worry last season. I don't think he made the leap that Carson Wentz did, and I think he's really got to step up. And in a couple of places, one, I think he has to adjust and realize that, hey, now I really have a running game. I got to use it. Number two, my play calling. I got to realize that this is a 60-minute game. Going for it on second and two in the first quarter and passing up the 3 points, it may lose me a bunch of games. And number three, I would like him to start listening a little more to his offensive coordinator. I understand Doug really likes calling plays. It makes him feel like he's down there on the ball, on the field and playing. But his offensive coordinator is a pretty smart guy, and I think he's got to lean on him, particularly in the second half when we have to adapt. When our game plan for the first half has been figured out, and now we have to change. Now we have to do something different.
Yeah, and Bob, I completely understand where you're coming from, and we're just up against the break, but hold off on all that stuff because I know that there's a large Doug Peterson talk that's coming, including some comments that got everybody and their panties in a twist, including Joe DeCameron. It was a real fun discussion on Tuesday.
Wait, Joe DeCameron? No way, really? He never gets that way.
So Todd, Bob, Steven, all hang on the line. We want to get to your phone calls as well, 888-729-9494. It's BGN Radio right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Where Eagles football lives, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
So it looks like the NFL really, really wants to get involved in this Ezekiel Elliott investigation, which we'll get to in the second hour. But Deadspin released this thing, and man, oh man, are they knocking on the door of every local police department in Columbus and good. Anywhere that they could. And they didn't used to do that at all. So we'll get into that. 888-729-9494. It's BGN Radio. I am John Barcher, James Seltzer, Brandon Lee Gouton, editor-in-chief of Bleeding Green Nation. .com as we are here till 3 o'clock, and then we've got Joe Giglio and Tank live from Citizens Bank Park that will lead you right up into the Phillies, and let's go to Todd in South Philly. Todd, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Yo, what's going on, guys?
Nothing much.
Yo,
man.
Todd.
Yo. So first, I just want to say I love this radio show. It's my favorite one to listen to.
Appreciate that, buddy.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks, buddy.
You always talk about interesting stuff, and I always like enjoy calling into you guys.
Appreciate it, Todd.
Yeah. So, I like, Jimmy can tell you, I have a lot of unconventional thinking outside the box ideas.
Okay.
So, Jason Kelsey, we all say he's a great pulling center, correct? Like, he can run.
Oh, I think
decent.
I know where you're going, Todd. I think I know where you're going, and I think
you?
I like it. Yeah.
I like him as either we could. I think he'd get bullied in the guard spot, but he's got the quickness. I think he could be an emergency fullback. So, like, yeah. LeGarrette Blount needs a fullback in order for him to be able to run properly. He's never been great without one. I think if Jason Kelsey could drop back into that fullback position with how quick he is, I think he could really start pulling and making a difference in that backfield.
Okay, so I don't know if anybody remembers, but way back in the day, in the early days of Donovan McNabb and Andy Reid, they had the dumbest formation ever where they would stack two. It was, well, first of all, it used to be John Ritchie and then whatever big guy that was right onto his right, and then the running back would be behind him. Like, it was the ridiculous, and it was only used for quarterback sneaks. Every single person knew it was quarterback sneak. But if you run a pistol, Honey Bobo, Jason Kelsey package with LeGarrette, if it looks like, you know,
the
when
the most ridiculous thing you've ever
if
seen.
Everybody means from last year when Michigan just lined up in a straight line, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So it's Bo Allen, Jason Kelsey, and LeGarrette Blount, and just go. You know, I love that idea.
It's like, or just 800 pounds of beef.
Put all the meat up on the goal line and score a touchdown. Listen, it's not absurd. Ideal, and it would never happen, and the Eagles would never do it. But I want it to happen.
Well, you do what you do is you do that. You set it up. You fake to Blunt. And you throw a fade to Alshon. What up?
Dude, but yeah, Jason Kelce, just because it would never happen, but I think he could actually have success as a fullback, just because we all say he's undersized, but he's a good size if he were to just be coming out of the backfield swinging and blocking.
It would be
he's used to taking on those linebackers and stuff. I think he would actually be effective at it.
Listen, Todd, I know that everybody would go, that was so stupid. Yeah, but it's fun. And I love that idea. And if Jason Kelce could catch a football, that would be the only time that I would be in favor of putting a fullback back in the NFL. That's it. And because I hate fullbacks, I don't think they're useless. I don't if you don't have a running back that can go do the thing, forget about it. But no, where are you looking at me?
Oh,
so
yeah,
funny?
I you know me. I could, if I never, and no offense to John Ritchie, who I love, if I never saw a fullback again in the NFL, I'd be totally fine with it. Ritchie even says it. He's like, I don't know why anyone would play fullback growing up. He's like, there's no point in the way the game is played today.
No one gets, I don't remember ever anybody, even through my Pop Warner days, of being like, yeah, I'll play fullback. That sounds great. It's just the kid who couldn't really do anything but could block okay.
Well, because usually, right, like the actual fullbacks are like the kids who play running back in high school, or like the best running back in the state, but are a little too slow or a little too big or whatever, and then fullback and so on and so forth.
All right, let's go to Bob in Philly. Bob, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Kind of going off with the last caller, my biggest concern is LeGarrette Blount. I know he's an awesome running back, but we all got hyped about DeMarco Murray coming to Philadelphia, and I worry that our line is not New England's line. Let's be honest.
Our line is what? Not what line?
It's not New England.
New England's not that great. Talent-wise, okay. Scarnecchia is probably the best offensive line coach in the game, but I don't
think... They've been struggling for 2 years.
Yeah, but what they've done is they've made a lot out of a little, but they're very deficient talent-wise comparatively.
But okay, do you think we're going to have another letdown like we did with DeMarco Murray?
No, I think this is a complete... First and foremost, DeMarco Murray was paid like $50 million or whatever, so I think... And also DeMarco Murray was coming off like... His obviously best season ever, and one of the best seasons we've seen from a running back in a number of years too. So, look, LeGarrette Blount's a 1 year deal for what, $1.5 million, $2 million, whatever it is. It's a very low stakes deal. I know that we as Eagles fans are expecting a lot from him because he's coming into a position that we desperately needed something there. But look, LeGarrette Blount's a really nice player, but I don't think anyone should be expecting him to come in and be the star of the offense. I don't think a DeMarco Murray type letdown is even possible.
Well, yeah, and Bob, we appreciate the phone call, too. And the other thing, too, is just if you're expecting him to carry 275 times, or if the Eagles are planning on doing that stuff, yes, be ready to be disappointed.
Of course, but because that's not going to work. That should not be the plan. Exactly, right. Yes.
He should be right in that 110 area, that 130 area, which is basically what he's been his entire career. And I think some of that is, it is concerning with the amount of carries that you have through there then the next year.
Sure.
It's not as great. He fits into that category.
Sure.
But, a lot of that's a little skewed because they just leaned on him while Tom Brady was out. They leaned on him to do – Jacoby Brissett was in there for 2 games. They just continued to give him the football. It eased off as the season went on.
And also, DeMarco Murray, while for Blount it was his career high and all type of stuff, DeMarco Murray had, record numbers of touches. We're talking about a guy who was used into the ground. LeGarrette Blount had a lot of carries for LeGarrette Blount, who is also a guy – who his whole career has had less miles on him than a guy like DeMarco Murray. So just in my mind, it's not even a comparable situation.
No, absolutely. I thought BLG, he gave me I got a great point face, and then I read it incorrectly, which is why I would have lost in the World Series of Poker. So that's what's going on. Bob and Marlton, we didn't forget about your question, too. It's a very large Doug Peterson topic, as we're going to
get
into that. We're going to answer that very soon. But we got to go to our main man, Steven in West Palm Beach. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Doing fantastic now.
Yeah, thank you very much. we're right on the eve of training camp, and then it's just nonstop 5 months of football, so life is good.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to touch on real quick, because I know you guys didn't have a chance to get to it on the pod yesterday, actually was Doug Peterson's comment saying, that this Eagles team probably, quote-unquote probably, has more talent than the Packers team that won it in '96. And one thing that jumped off the page to me is Doug always comes across as kind of a company guy, right? His press conferences are really boring. You never really get much substance out of him. So for him to say that, I kind of looked at it as definitely different. And I think, it doesn't really bother me too much, only because I think that it goes back to that tacky tagline of emotional intelligence. I think that, instills confidence in his team and lets him know that, hey, I was on this team and I think you guys have the capability of being that good.
I think that's a great point, Steven. I think that goes into the whole going for it and fourth down thing that James especially loves here. Like that mentality of like, these are my guys. I believe in these guys a lot. I do like that part of it. I don't like the part in the sense of like, I write about this stuff. So like, if there's ever a quote, like I'm sure we'll talk about this later, like Jason Pierre-Paul saying the Giants can go undefeated this year, like that stuff, I just think it always can come back and bite you in a certain way. But in this case with Doug Peterson, I do like the confidence that he has in his guys. I do think it's a bold comparison, but I did like something that I read that Ruben Frank actually like double checked back with Doug after that interview they did that day when he said that, and Doug he stood by it. It wasn't like a situation where like, oh,
Doug never stands by things when he says
yeah. It wasn't like he just said this thing and it kind of like got away from him. He's like, oh no, I can't believe I just said that. He was like, no, he doubled down on it. He really believes it, and I like the confidence.
Double down, Doug. Let's go with that.
That's right. And again, Malik Jackson down there in Jacksonville saying that they're going to win the Super Bowl this year. That's a clear trope alert. I think that this is just adding that extra confidence in his team. Real quick, fellas, before I get off, I got an over-under for you.
Oh, I like, yeah. And if you don't know by now, Stephen Lee is the master of over-under, so we're ready.
I'm trying, man. This isn't a sexy, but Jalen Mills, 9 starts. He had 2 last year.
Ooh, I like it. Yeah, that's a...
I mean, it better be now, over. This team's in a lot of trouble if now, it's not over.
Now,
sad
I wonder,
as that is to say.
Is because we're in the era that we are, if he's starting at nickel... Which, again, I don't really understand either, but a lot of people suggest that maybe he goes in a nickel slot if Ron Brooks or something happens.
I think
Does that count as a start?
If he's on the field the first play
of
the game.
That's what matters, yeah.
I'm going to take the under.
Whoa! I'm taking the under over easy. I'm the easier. Easy, I mean, I think it's like, potentially 16, but injury the only reason it's not.
I think we need to get ready for a tandem of Rasul Douglas and Patrick Robinson.
Oh, man!
I just think it's going to happen at some point. And it's not a knock on Jalen Mills. It's definitely not a knock.
I'm not a huge Mills guy.
I think they're going to get frustrated at some point, and that's going to be a carousel of who's going to start this week.
I think they believe in Mills a lot. Like, at least the rhetoric that we've heard coming from them, coming from Schwartz, Pierce, and all these guys.
Even
the players is a lot of Jalen Mills love and belief and whatnot. So I think they're going to give him every chance to kind of work his way out of it if he does start.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. And what Bob and Marlton has said at Stephen Lee in West Palm Beach, it's a large discussion that we want to get into, but we also want to get everybody's points in as well. Dennis in Springfield, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Yo, I'm in Springfield, but West Palm Beach, it ain't got nothing on North Wildwood. That's where we're at.
Tell him, Dennis.
Oh, man.
The worst
hottest take of the day.
The worst contract Howie gave out over the last couple of years was Fletcher Cox.
Incorrect. It was Vinnie Curry.
It was Vinnie Curry.
Yeah. You know what? You may give me a fight there. But defensive tackle is the most overrated position in the NFL.
Here's the difference, Dennis. I don't think the position is overrated. I think the market is too high for it.
The market's way too high.
Yeah.
I mean, if any of you guys can tell me the last 4 or 5 Super Bowl winners or the last 4 or 5 years, the top 4 defenses, have any of them had $100 million defensive tackle?
No, but
there are only
a
few $100 million defensive tackles for what it's worth. There's three.
But if you put J.J. Watt on the Patriots, that probably changes that, right?
Or Aaron Donald on one of those teams, that changes that, yeah.
But it's just, it's like the running back position now. Nobody wants to pay running backs because they're basically, they're pretty much interchangeable and you can get a guy in the draft all the time. You don't need a great defensive tackle. You need above-average defensive tackles, and you need competent defensive tackles.
I get what you're saying. I think you just need playmakers along that defensive line, whether they're inside or outside. It's just more classic that the outside guys are the ones who make the big difference, the Von Miller.
If Fletcher gets 12 sacks this year, we're all going to say great year, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Okay, and that's not even a sack
year.
A game.
What was that?
That's not. But you're making
a sack
it sound
every game. What are you asking,
Dennis,
for?
You're making it sound like it's so easy to reel off 12 sacks. You know,
as
how
a
hard
defensive
that is?
Tackle. Yeah. Are you, like, who was the last defensive tackle to get 12 sacks? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you're talking about.
It doesn't happen.
And as much as we love and admire him in this town, Jerome Brown was averaged like 8 or 9 a year, and he was spectacular. Like it's all the way that defensive tackles works is to make sure that the DNs finish. Like, that's part of the game. Push them out of the pocket, make him go to one side or the other, and then they clean up the mess.
It's not his Fletcher Cox's primary job is not to sack the quarterback.
Yeah, definitely disruption and a lot of that. So we will get into the Doug Peterson discussion, including, is the window open? Is it more closed? I've got some interesting thoughts on it. It's BGN Radio right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The Phillies' winning percentage the past 5 years is about 36%. About the same as mine with my wife.
What, am I not skanky enough for you?
Looking forward to what's next and talking about it here. Sports Radio 94 WIP.
A lot of people that have taken Doug Peterson's quote and just kind of ran with it. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe that he's comparing the 1996 Green Bay teams or the 90s Green Bay teams to the same talent.
Right?
That you have to listen to that. The talent. Not the team. Not the team. The talent.
Eh.
Because, I don't know, you look at that roster and I'm just not like, I'm not blown away by anything. I was just like, yeah, I think you could make the argument that they might have the same talent. And listen, I'm not saying that Brandon Graham or Derek Barnett, even though he's been compared to every 5 seconds to Reggie White's sack record, there is no Reggie White on this football team currently. There is no Brett Favre on this football team currently. But there could be a Brett Favre here. I don't think there's ever going to be a Reggie White again, but there could be a Brett Favre here, and maybe you can recreate Reggie White in throughout the you know, the depth that they have there between all the different sacks. Maybe you can recreate.
All the D linemen together can equal Reggie White.
Possible. And even then, I'm not sure. But, I the full quote as he goes on through here is, well, we had the same talent in 2011, and that really didn't work out either, so it doesn't really matter overall. It comes on me. I love that about Doug Peterson. And when he goes back to saying, let's go and see what, are you just like you were saying, where Roop checked in on, you sure about that? Yes, I'm sure about that. I'm not backing down from my comments. The target's on my back. And now I'm expecting a playoff team. So if they don't get into the playoffs, then we have a large discussion about Doug again. I'm fine with what he said. And if Carson or if any other player said that and said, I think we have a lot of talent on this team. Obviously, talent doesn't do all this stuff. But I think we're the team to beat in the NFC East. We'd be going nuts. If Carson Wentz said that, we would love it. We would eat it up. There would be some like, hey, you shouldn't be saying that type of stuff. But Dak Prescott said the same thing. Nobody's getting in a fuss about that. I'm sure Dallas fans love that. I love what Doug Peterson said. I don't care.
Yeah, I I love it. I love you. I like the spirit behind it. Like what Brandon was talking about before, the concept of doing whatever you can to fire up your guys. And Doug loves his guys. He loves Doug Peterson people and all that. Like, I get that. And I impossible to dislike that general concept. My issue is, don't compare this team to a Super Bowl winning team. Like, just don't do it. You're adding extra pressure to a team that is theoretically kind of rebuilding right now, or at least in like the
rebuilding
some
rebuilding?
Stages of rebuilding,
rebuilding?
Like, right, all right, building up, let's say, like they were like kind of rebuilding. They did the second pick in the draft last year, even though they trade up for it. They got a new franchise quarterback. They are in the process of trying to become a contender again. They are not a automatic contender yet, we hope. My point is, like, I'm again, the thought behind it, that's fine. I like you supporting guys. I think he took it a step too far. If he had said, I think we're the team to beat in the NFC East, I'd have no problem with that. Don't compare him to a team that won the Super Bowl. Like, that's crazy.
So that's it. They are just saying, like, they could have the same kind of talent as a Super Bowl team.
It's just a stupid thing to say. It's just adding expectations that don't need to be there. I'm all for belief in your guys, belief in yourself, belief in your team. It just is an added layer of expectation that I don't think you need to place.
James, I think your problem with Doug Peterson, let me put my Dr. Phil hat on there.
Oh,
James,
no.
I think you're.
Is that
your
like
problem.
A bald cap? Is that the Dr.
Hold
Phil
on.
Hat?
I need to hear the full impression of that.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
He was about to do it. Do it. Do it.
Well, James, the problem. That's
pretty good. That you have not
with,
bad.
Doug Peterson is that you just don't like him.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's probably the biggest problem.
No, it is. It's up there in the problem.
I think when it comes to that, though, and it comes to this year, I don't know if he's putting pressure on the team as much as he's putting it on himself, which I think is fair. If you're going to put pressure on yourself and you're going to say, hey, I'm going to stand accountable for it,
I
respect that. Hey, you're the guy. All right, then after the season, Doug's going to have to answer for that.
Sure.
Everyone's going to be like, hey, Doug, you said you thought this team had the talent comparable to a Super Bowl winning team. What went wrong? How much of it is on you now that your team didn't get there, or hopefully they do get there, but if it doesn't, then he has to answer for it. And as in your theory, he could be held accountable in the sense that maybe he loses his job.
Yeah, man, because that's what I'm saying. You should be happy. What you want.
Here's the thing. I don't think it makes a difference. I think if they don't make the playoffs, he's losing his job, regardless of whether he says they're the best team ever or the worst team ever. Extenuating circumstances. If, God forbid, Carson Wentz gets hurt or something, it's a very different situation.
Way to go.
I said God forbid, all right? God is on Carson's side. We're good here. But I think that, like, seriously, I think that I get what you're saying. I just think that it doesn't matter. I think Peterson's gone if they don't make the playoffs, period. End of story. I think he's gone.
So why are you upset then? That's what I'm saying.
I'm not really upset. I'm not like livid. I'm not like, shut up, Doug, you're ruining everything. I'm just saying I feel like I think he could have done it differently. That's it. I don't like, you know.
He done it differently. I mean, Jesus, he was on that football team. I think he had to like,
he's just identifying
the experience.
Right.
He was there in 2011.
What he's saying is ridiculous, is my point. I'm saying it's ridiculous to say that this team has the same talent as a team that won the Super Bowl. In my mind.
That's what I'm saying. Then what is our expectation as this football team? We don't think it's a playoff team.
Hopefully
we don't think
playoffs.
It could eventually go on a run. Then what are we talking about?
You think this is a Super Bowl team?
I think it could go on a run in the playoffs. Wow. I don't think it's a Super Bowl team, but it could go on a run in the playoffs.
Okay, so then
talking about this team could be the best offensive line if Jason Peters has another 16-game season and Lane Johnson's here and the splits were so dramatically different with Carson Wentz.
Who is this we're talking about?
The fan base in general. If everybody's pumping this thing up and thinking...
I think they're an 8-9 win team and maybe 10 if all things go right. So how are we? That's very different from the team that won a Super Bowl.
It's not the record. It's the talent.
Right. This team is not as talented as that team that won the Super Bowl in my mind.
888-729-9494. Let's go to JD real quick. JD, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey guys, great show. I was just tuning in and listening. Now you're talking about the defense and, I just keep going back, and I live right on, like, the Mason-Dixon line between Giant and Eagle. You know what I'm saying? I'm, like, on the south side of 70. All my buddies are Giant fans.
I'm sorry.
I know. It's horrible. It's horrible. And listen, and top it off, 1979, I lose the state championship to Toms River North on the last play of the game in Giant Stadium. So after losing zero games the whole time in high school, yeah, it was horrible.
Boy, oh boy.
Horrible. Yeah, and the head coach of Toms River North was a guy named Bob Fiacco. And I find out like 20 years, 25 years later that he's a huge Eagle fan. He gathered them guys up after they scored and they were down 14-13, 30 seconds in the game, and asked them if they wanted to go for two. We beat them 2 weeks earlier, like 28-3 for the short conference championship. They all said, yeah, let's go for it, you know? Horrible.
Clearly you're over it. So.
Hey, listen, I want to go back and play it again, and I'm 57. Gather everybody up like they, you know. But listen, the Giants won. I want you guys to name me one guy in the secondary, the 2007-2011 Giants Super Bowls. Go ahead.
2007 to 2011.
Yeah, don't Google it.
I'm not googling anything. I'm trying to go back from memory.
Seahorn still there in 2007? He
wasn't. Seahorn was. Yeah, Seahorn was
going way back.
Yeah, in other words, nobody.
I mean, Will Blackman. I feel like Will Blackman was in one of those secondaries.
But JD, that's what we're saying. It just has to be serviceable because that defensive line was great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just don't get beat deep, and let's go get the quarterback. The name of the game, as far as I'm concerned, since. You know, you were playing Mighty Might, is let's go get the quarterback.
Agreed.
Oh, no, absolutely. But, JD, the problem is, and we appreciate the call, we're just up against the break there, but a great story. I think that's the problem, though, too. If it's not serviceable to the point of, like, they can't even cover in those immediate routes where they keep getting crushed, defensive line no longer exists. We'll get into it. We'll argue about Doug Peterson a little more probably, and we'll take your phone calls. 888-729-9494. John Barcher, James Seltzer, Brandon Lee Gowton. It's BGN Radio right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
94 WIP FM HD1 Philadelphia from the Tasty Cake Studios. This is BGN Radio on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
So I don't think we're ever going to agree on Doug Peterson. The football season just needs to happen.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at with this thing. It's BGN Radio, Sports Radio 94 WIP. John Barcher, James Seltzer, Editor-in-Chief of BleedingGreenNation.com, Mr. Brandley Gowton, and your phone calls at 888-729-9494. Now, I think we, and trust me, we'll keep going with the Doug Peterson stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that the window is more closed than it is open with this particular group. The window's always going to be open with Carson Wentz if he pans out and is that franchise quarterback, and that's great. But in the history of the NFL, if they're not going to win the Super Bowl in the next 3 years, they probably won't. And unless you get a new coach or a new quarterback, nothing really changes. And we've seen that pretty much throughout everyone's career, even Hall of Famers that have come through this thing. Russell Wilson, he wins a Super Bowl in year two, three.
Yes, two.
Aaron Rodgers, same thing. You know, and it takes a while to kind of get back to it. So, like, people like Matt Ryan this year with the Falcons, they had a great run. They went to the NFC Championship game, and then they had to go back and reset. They got a new coach, and then they got back to the Super Bowl again. So, it is with this window, with Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, Fletcher Cox, Malcolm Jenkins, all those guys that are around there that are going to be in their primes and are going to be peaking for a while. Sure, well, there'll be playoff runs, and there'll be different stuff that is going on, and the last time that even happened with the Eagles alone, with Andy and McNabb, was in 2008, and that was just kind of like, oh, wow, that's weird. They're here, you know? So you don't really see too often that a team, after, you know, 3-4 years of trying to get this thing rolling, and be like, okay, now we have all of the pieces to at least contend. Sure, we're weak here, or we're really strong there. But I don't think this window is as open as everybody thinks it is. Unless, of course, you think that Doug Peterson is going to be fired and then the discussion moves on a little further and kicks the can on down the road. But this team doesn't have as much time as people think, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think the way, and obviously it's a phrasing type of thing and all that.
Sure.
I think we all agree that if Carson Wentz is going to be a franchise quarterback, then the window is his career, essentially. But I'm with you. I think that the way the team is currently constituted now, it's kind of what we were just talking about. It's kind of a weird juxtaposition where it's like they're kind of trying to like recently start over in a sense, but at the same time kind of tooling up, you know, in the short term as they go with these 1 year contracts with, you know, guys who are on the back end, guys like Jason Peters, of course, and, you know, a fair amount of guys who we don't necessarily expect to be here in the next 3 to 4 years. So yeah, I think it's 100% more closed than open. It's just a really interesting dynamic because you think of Carson Wentz being the window. So it's kind of a tough one, but I agree. I think the way the team is currently constituted, especially obviously like assuming Doug Peterson does not lose his job, which, you know, depends on how it goes this season and all that. But I think it's more closed than open.
Then that's what I mean to hear BLG. Like, I don't know if there's that type of sense that you get from just kind of what's surrounding this. And look, if it all comes really down to if Joe Douglas is the mecca of you know, scouting and things like that, and he can replace those guys, and you don't even think about it, sure, that's a different situation. But I don't know. I think that they have to be a little more aggressive. They have to attack this thing. It's why I don't mind Doug saying what he's saying. They got to get going right now.
I think Doug's window is more limited. You know, obviously James thinks it could be over as soon as this year.
three weeks in.
Yeah. Hey, if they're 0-3 and they lose by like a 90-10 total score.
Well, anyone loses 90-10. You know? That's pretty bad. But I think Carson, to your point, James, I think Carson's window is wide open. I mean, that and in theory, that should keep the team's window open through several eras, maybe of different coaches or different
players.
Well, I'm going to say general manager, but Howie Roseman's going to be here forever. So
yeah. A lifetime contract is a lifetime contract, yeah. Brandon.
But I do think it's an interesting point because I did that post earlier on this week on Bleeding Green Nation about how 13 of the players on the Eagles 53-man roster are going to be 30. It's really 12 because Ryan Matthews is in there. So 12 are going to be 30 or older by the end of the season. And JP is going to turn 36 after this season. Mm-hmm. He's your left tackle. And the specialists are in there too, so the punters, like, so you're not too
Doran
worried about
Boss
that.
Yeah, and stuff, sure.
Donnie Jones, you're not as worried. But Darren Sproles, you know, who's like, guys, when this offense just had nothing last year and there was no running back you could rely on, Darren Sproles, for the first time in his career at age 33, was all of a sudden a lead running back.
Yeah.
Like he's the and how many games, going back to the Chip Kelly era, where just playing awful, these are just playing awful, but a Darren Sproles big play or Darren Sproles punt return just springs the game open.
Absolutely.
Like, to lose a guy like that's going to be huge. So there are some key pieces here that the Eagles will have to replace. And so when you talk about that window, that's what the concerns are.
And that was one of the things that Bob Marlton had mentioned in that running game, and I never really got to. I don't think that this is, you know, that they have huge running back talent now, and all of a sudden the running game is going to be great. There's still going to be a long way to go with that. We don't know who's going to be, you know, if I'm already thinking that LeGarrette Blount is anywhere in that 100 to 130 carries range, then what happens? Then, you know, like, okay, does it go Smallwood after that? Does it go, is Sproles the number two guy? Is Pumphrey, like, there's four running backs and even five of Corey Clement, you know, who I mentioned on the podcast too. It's like, I think you're definitely ended up on the practice squad because there's just no room. And they're not gonna let you make this team over any of those guys, and they're gonna have to let you wait for a year here. I don't know that a running back by committee has ever been it's been useful and it works here and there, but like I'm still on they don't have a guy that can just be the guy. So I don't expect them to just all of a sudden have a running game. I'm getting ready for 2002 Eagles, where it's you got to just, you know, here's 100 carries, here's 100 carries,
yeah.
And you're going to all be involved in the passing game somehow.
Well, I think, especially when you look at the you know, with bringing Blount in, the way that the group there is constituted, you got the big bruiser, you got Sproles who could do everything, you got Smallwood who's a little different from both of those guys, and then I think Pumphrey theoretically could be all over the place, so who knows whether it's in the slot or in the backfield or whatever, but yeah, I think Clement has no chance. Sadly, I like Corey Clement, but I think he has pretty much no chance to make the roster with
incredibly hard.
Someone needs to get hurt or Wendell Smallwood. They need to like Wendell Smallwood less than we think they like him. But regardless, John, I think there's no way that this is a situation where you have a bell cow guy. Like maybe there's a game where the matchup dictates that, like, all right, this is Blount's game. This is a soft defensive front. Like we're gonna plow into him all game, but I think that is going to be the exception more than the rule.
All right, let's go to Mitchie Tools there in Center City. What's going on, Mitch?
Hey, I'm at work, guys. Art, let's all get excited for another 8 or 9 win season.
Mitchie, wait. That's well said.
You know, I'm a long time caller. I'm excited, but you know, let's all talk about we have you know Lane Johnson, blah blah blah. But this has to be a Wentz show this year.
Of course,
has to be because ultimately. We talk about coaching this, but this quarterback has to step up. And I want your thoughts on it. But I'm looking at the schedule, 9 wins. I'm not seeing bells and whistles from every department in this organization. I want your thought on that. I mean, everybody's getting excited. You know, oh, we're going to go to the playoffs. Let's just see what happens. And I want your thoughts. Is Wentz going to come out smoking gun? Is he going to be conservative?
And just kind of roll it out through there, yeah. And Mitch, we appreciate the call, but I know you're at work, so I didn't want to have you stay on the phone that long. I think just what everything's doing, and as we look at these Doug Peterson comments, it's about firing those guys up and getting them going. It doesn't mean that you know ultimately they're just going to turn into a Super Bowl team overnight, but you got to put that mentality in their head. You got to get Wentz going. We've all said that once the season runs through Carson Wentz in his second year leap, and if it's not large. Ooh, that's when we're all going to have some wet pants and some soiled pants. And we're like, what is going on here?
I don't even think you need to say the season runs through Wentz's jump. I think you say the future of the Eagles runs through Wentz's jump. Yeah. I think it's that important that we see a noticeable jump this year, especially. I mean, there are no excuses, right? Like we've talked a lot and like we've talked about this a ton on the podcast at @BGN_radio about the idea that, you know, like, one way or the other, like there, Carson Wentz last year, we've made a lot of excuses for him. And sometimes maybe we're wrong to do that, but there were legitimate reasons you could point to the overuse, that the atrocious group of weapons around him, all that stuff. Yeah. But this year there aren't. Like, you know, obviously injuries can happen, excuses can happen along the way, but with the way they've set it up, with the offensive line they should have, with the weapons they should have around him, and with Wentz having a full offseason, working with the QB guru, all that type of stuff, BLG, like there's no excuses. Carson Wentz, we hope he has to take a legitimate step forward.
And to bring it back to the first thing I said on the show today, that like he's the guy I want to see really step up right away in training camp and come out strong, not like he did so much in spring practices where it's kind of a slower start. Like, because that's you hit the nail on the head there, James. He's the franchise. It's not mm-hmm. just about this season. And I think the one thing to keep in mind about that is we always talk about how, you know, these players make that big leap from year one to year two. I think that's a very valid point, and I think we do need to see that growth. We need to see improvement. I think it's important to remember he's not a finished product yet still. I mean, again, we have to go back to the fact that this guy is only still not too far removed from being in NCAA 1 FCS. And, you know, he threw the amount of passes he threw last year, which is the second most of any rookie ever, that was almost the same amount he threw in 4 years of college
That's
combined.
Insane.
Like, so there's still a learning curve here. I'm not saying that excuses like flat out bad play, but I'm just saying, you know, like, we can't nitpick too much in year two to the extent of like, oh, well, you know, I didn't like this little thing. I mean, like, it'll be obvious, I think. If he improves and we're seeing it, we'll know. I think it'll
Absolutely.
Be clear.
Yeah, and that's where I always come back to, like, if there are, it has to be so incredibly bad for them to fire Doug Peterson. Because look at what's on the line just on top of everything else. You've invested in this young QB. You sold the entire fan base that you have a plethora of guys that have played the position, including your head coach, your offensive coordinator, and your QB coach have done all that stuff. On top of which, this will be another short stint for a head coach. You hired Chip Kelly. You got rid of him in 3 years. And I know that there's all the circumstances and Chip Kelly's a bad guy and whatever, but that still doesn't matter for an incoming head coach. And now you're going to fire the guy that replaced him in 2 years if he doesn't make the playoffs. Now you're filled with this. I mean, all we've asked for is consistency a lot of the time after all this kind of mad scramble is happening. So, yes, there are definitely, and I'm not saying that you just wait and see when you try and hire somebody better than Doug Peterson. It's not as easy as it looks. Look, if he's incredibly bad, you need to move on. Sure, we've all had the theory that, you know, if Flip would take over or Reich would take over, whoever. What does that mean for Schwartz in this stuff? I mean, a new incoming head coach is literally going to go, I don't want that. I don't want that. I need my own staff, and let's rock and roll here. They are not going to get another Doug Peterson, and that's why no matter what, he's going to be on this football team next year.
Oh, no matter what is a ridiculous thing
no
to say.
No matter what.
Oh, so if they go 6-10 or 5-11, he's 16. Back. Yeah, 0-16. I mean, come on.
No, I said with the extreme of all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Regardless, and I agree with the general, you know, thought of what you're saying. I do think that the Eagles don't want to keep firing and rehiring head coaches. I don't think they want that instability.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe it's a little side game.
They love it.
I'll bet you $1.
Mortimer! That was good. But for real, I'm with you. I'm sure that's not what they want. But ultimately, you need to have a good guy in that spot, right? Like, that's more important. It's more important than the consistency to get the right guy in that job. And in my opinion, if he's not the right guy, then you have to move on. And I'm not saying we know that he is or isn't. I obviously lean more towards he's not. You lean more towards he might be. But regardless, I think that what happens on the field this season is going to matter for him, even though they don't want the instability. If he continues to make mistakes he shouldn't make, if they are a 7-9, 8-8 team that wasn't as close to the playoffs as they should have been, whatever it is, I think he's gone.
888-729-94-94, #94-94 on your Verizon AT&T cells. It is BGN Radio on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Let's go to Quinn in Reading. Quinn, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
What up, Quinn?
Hey, Jimmy. How's it going? How was Portland, man?
It was awesome. It was a blast.
It looked like it was too awesome, by the way.
Yeah, a little too awesome, but, you know, I'll get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, hey, well, I love everything you guys are putting out now. BGN's awesome. Counterpoint's great.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, look at that. Jack Fritz with his hand in there.
I love it. It's great.
Thanks, pal.
But, yeah, I just wanted to call in, check in with you guys. I just wanted to say also if I think a real concern for this season is if Nick Foles has to start any game. That's going to be real tough.
You know you're hitting on Brandon's wheelhouse.
You're speaking to the right people here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because we need Wentz. We need to ride him to wherever he's going to take us. But also just in terms of the Doug Peterson conversation, I really think everything is in his hands. If he wants to keep his job, he needs to not make stupid mistakes. And if he does that, he won't get fired.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. And again, I don't think Doug Peterson is this freaking guru, and we're all going to be like, oh, right. My, how did this happen? And he's the next Belichick.
Who do you love more, Doug Peterson or Sam Bradford? It's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't know. we'll have to reach into the pot of gold and come out and see what happens on the other side. But honestly, I think I look at him the same way I do with the secondary. If he's comparable, Carson Wentz is going to take care of the rest. That's right. It. That's what I'm saying. Like, just call good plays. That's all he needs to be. Because if Carson Wentz is what he is, we're good. We're all good. Yeah. We've seen it with every bad head coach in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is spectacular, and he makes up for the head coach's mistakes.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl.
I know that's like a high reach because Aaron Rodgers is one of the best of all time.
And also,
but still.
Mike McCarthy made one of the worst coaches to win a Super Bowl as well. So it's like a real juxtaposition there. So
what is it? Hold on, time out. What is it with that word in the sports world now? Why is everybody using that word?
Well, because it's a good word to describe things on opposite ends of the spectrum.
I hear it everywhere. It's amazing how they
really
caught fire.
Smart if you use big terms.
Yes.
Listen, I'm stupid, Quinn, and I don't like them because it rattles my brain.
John, there are a lot of machinations to this discussion.
Machinations!
Look at that.
Fantastic. Well, we'll have a big words conversation in the
get John
in the
Ritchie
offset.
And he'll win easily. I've never heard anyone use it. He uses at least one word a show. I've never heard of him.
But that's why I keep coming back to though. Like, I don't understand what do you want Doug Peterson to be? Do you want him to be the best, or like how many discussions have we had in any sport in this town? Coach doesn't really need to be that good. He just needs to not make mistakes.
Let's shoot for mediocrity. That sounds great. Like, I don't need my coach to be good.
No, the talent just needs to be on the field.
I know. I'm with you. It's more important. But, like, look, if you're given a choice of you can have a really good coach, you can have this mediocre guy who might be fine. Right, exactly. So my point is, like, if they're not winning with this mediocre coach, then he should go. Like, I get it. You can win with a mediocre. We've seen, again, Mike McCarthy. We've seen teams win with mediocre, too bad head coaches.
But that's what I'm saying. What we don't know the line on that.
And we don't know what Doug is.
Is it eight wins? Is it seven? Is it six? Like, when you say no.
My line is if they don't make the playoffs, he's gone. Like,
good.
That's
but
what
that's,
I'm saying. That's
what he was saying. And that's why I'm going,
that's what
okay,
Doug is saying.
You and I both look at this team. And I'm pretty sure Brandon does too at a 9-win football team.
Yeah, they're right on the fringe of making the playoffs. They're right there.
So if Doug says, actually, guys, there's a lot of talent on this football team and we're ready to go.
But back my point, I don't care about that though. Like, that's
fine. No, but I'm saying my expectation now goes, Doug says this is a playoff team. Great. Now I think it's a playoff team. And if it's not, then we need to have a serious conversation about it. If you don't make the playoffs.
Right.
I love it. That's what I'm saying.
Fine.
Let's get the horses up and let's freaking rock and roll.
That's fine. And cool. Whatever. Again, to my point of if it's going to get them gone, if they don't make the playoffs, let's roll. But I get what you're saying. My point is more just like, just if Doug Peterson says he believes they're a playoff team, that doesn't make me believe they're a playoff team. Like, I don't. I'm not saying that you believe or I believe.
I'm saying the expectation is now this is a playoff team.
Right, which
so
was
I'm saying,
stupid of him to do.
I don't think so. It all
shows Doug Peterson another brilliant saying.
Yeah, good job.
Conference.
Yeah, where's your juxtaposition now?
It trying was to spit gone, out words.
But why is it stupid?
It was gone.
Why is it stupid if you believe that anyway?
I know. Well, it's look, because I think it adds
more
pressure.
Oh, is Facebook killing him right now, by the way?
Yeah, what are you going to say? Everyone hates teams.
What else is new? Look, I'm with you. Look, I think they could certainly be a playoff team with Doug Peterson. Like, I think that Doug Peterson could do less harm than he did this past season. I think that is absolutely in play.
And that's where I think we've just gone and blown all this stuff up where it's just like, oh, we lost all these games. He lost, I think, maybe two games in my head, Dallas. And I won't even
the Giants game. He lost the Giants.
I don't agree with the Giants.
See, I think Carson Wentz lost
Carson
the Giants.
Wentz did too, whatever, hand in hand. They both played. The point was, bad as Wentz played, they still had a chance to win the game if certain decisions go certain
They had
ways.
A chance to win both of those games down to the wire. So it's not like he just like totally
right.
blew
not
this game.
I'm not saying it's all Doug Peterson's fault. I'm saying that, you know, they also won a game at the end of the season that doesn't count. So like, you know, they're a 6-win team as much as anything, but regardless, the point, I'm not saying, oh, it's all Doug Peterson's fault. They lost 9 games because of Doug Peterson. I'm saying Doug Peterson didn't do anything to show me that he is one of the 32 best head coaches in the NFL.
One of the 32 best.
There's 32 jobs. I'm saying, like, let's put it this way. Doug Peterson did nothing to show me that he should be one of the 32, like, one of these 32. Like, he didn't do it. What did he do to show you that? Like, the point is, I feel like it's still an unknown. I lean more towards I've been less impressed than more impressed.
We'll continue this. Plus, I definitely want to get into why Washington and Dallas are an extreme dumpster fire, because I can't wait for that. And every single Dallas fan that listens to our podcast just gets so twisted and so upset that we say actual facts about actual teams. It's BGN Radio right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP. So there's a lot going on in the offseason. And honestly, for as crazy and busy as it was with the Eagles, and even right now, I'm still expecting the Eagles are going to do something that we're all going to be scrambling about. But they haven't done that this year.
Can they trade Sam Bradford again?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that possible? That would be amazing. But I got to tell you, Washington and Dallas are giving us a real treat here. I mean, let's start with Dallas, just because I teased that first. But I definitely want to get into Washington because I think it's more atrocious. I think we can all agree in this room that Washington just has the worst offseason ever.
Oh, my correct? God, yes. Criminal, almost, in some ways.
Speaking of criminal, that's what I don't understand. Like, Dallas has had a pattern of this. That is not an arguable thing. Like, we can all... The funny thing to me is when we bring up things like Ezekiel Elliott, and there are Eagles fans, including myself, who tweet stuff like, man, Zeke Elliott seems like a real big piece of blah. And people don't need to get arrested to you know, have their character criticized. It's pretty straightforward. I think we've done that with our own players a lot in this town. But, you know, Deadspin put out this thing, and trust me, please go read it. It's a very hard for me to explain in such a short amount of time. But the basic premise of this is that the NFL was trying to desperately get every single detail that was coming through Columbus in a tiny bit of a shady way, like almost a conflict of interest type of way, where it's just like, you just have to let us handle our case. We'll get to you. Everything's on public record. But they keep needling and needling, like, no, we need to know everything, 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 everything. And it's weird to me how this Zeke thing has kind of panned out, where, sure, you could look at it two different ways. You could look on the side of, like, see, I told you he didn't really do anything, and this is people trying to do this and just trying to get a rise out of him, and they know he's an athlete, and I mean, it's not like they're getting money or anything out of him, right? Like, hey, I got an idea. When Zeke gets here, have him try and punch me in the nose. You know, think about that logically, and you're just going, well, that doesn't really add up that much. But, like, when all of this thing comes out where, I mean, sure, a bar brawl, whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, on top of everything, it doesn't really matter. I'm sure that we were all young in our 20s, and we got into fights. Hell, Jahlil Okafor here, we were kind of defending there when he was getting into fights in Boston and some of that, and it was kind of back and forth. Then he ended up being a bad player, and then we're like, well, see, this is should have been a pattern. Like, I get it. We all fan bases do that stuff. But it's just the track record of Ezekiel Elliott, which is more concerning, at least for in an NFL landscape and for Dallas alone. Like, they're freaking out about this. Everything that they've done, and that's the other side that I look at, I'm like, okay, well, logically, if you have, you know, a guy that was taking a selfie, delete his social media account after this thing happens. The Dallas police literally try to get a hold of the guy via Twitter who got punched in the nose. He's gone. And then this article on 105.3 The Fan just happens to be there from a freaking Dallas Cowboys fan. Oh, I saw the whole thing, actually. And Zeke didn't punch anybody. And everybody goes, see, I told you. That was the one thing that you're going off? Not everybody else just kind of ghosting? Look, this happens in the NFL a lot. People try and sweep things under the rug, especially when it's a primetime player.
I mean, they
put him in the NFL top 10, right? Somewhere out of the 100 or somewhere close to that. So, you know, it looks bad for everybody. That's what they're trying to hide. And Dallas is trying to hide it, too. This is Jerry's thing, and he pretty much runs the league. And this is nothing new. That's what I'm saying. It's not because, sure, I mean, in a football perspective, yeah, it would be great not to face Ezekiel out and whatever. But it's their characterization of the guys that they draft. It's the chances that they take. And sorry, this is what you're left with at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, just looking in the past year, I mean, Randy Gregory, we've got, you know, David Irving, we've got the other linebacker,
Damian Wilson,
Rolando McClain.
I mean, Nolan Carroll.
I mean, like, it's just one after the other after the other. And then, of course, you know, they did sign some guy named Greg Hardy a couple years ago. So it's just a pattern. And then, and specifically with Zeke, when you're just looking at the Zeke thing, it's like, you know, look, I'm very big on you know, guilt, innocent until proven guilty and all that
absolutely.
Type of stuff. There is so much smoke around this, and it's not just that it's like one thing. It's that it's one thing, then another thing, then another thing, and another thing. And it's at college, and it's a college, and now it's in the NFL, and it's this thing in the NFL, and then this thing, and then this thing. It, I mean, that's a pattern, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're not all false. It's not like none of these things happened, okay? There is too much there. We'll see how the investigation, how that stuff all comes out. But I think you really, BLG, personally, I think you have to look at the pattern of everything and say, all right, like, come on, man.
Totally agree. There was even a parking ticket, a speeding ticket, which in itself, not a major deal. But when you look on that on top of everything else, it's like, come on. Like, there's clearly something here. One point about the article about, oh, the guy who was like the key witness that said Zeke didn't do it. I couldn't believe this article got published. It literally said in the quote about this guy that Zeke didn't do it, that he was near Zeke because he wanted a selfie. He was a Cowboys fan. So like that's whose word we're trusting here. The other thing about this whole thing that I don't know if people realize this. I don't think people do as much. There are literally people hired in these organizations to make stuff disappear. And those literally. Guys make a lot of money. And by the way, there's been stuff with former Eagles players who've been in the city and on the team who there was things that you may have heard of if this person, you know, wasn't around and they weren't doing
their job.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. They're very good at their job. They make things disappear, and that's why you don't hear about it.
And listen.
Fixers.
It's a nightclub, right?
Yeah.
Nightclubs have cameras. Every single one of them.
Oh, yeah. Like, and lots of cameras.
All over the place. We knew that was LeSean McCoy the moment that story came out. Even though he was a former Eagle at that point, that came out. And guess what? He's not on the Eagles anymore. And guess why? They can't clean that up anymore because he's not with the Eagles. He's in Philadelphia. So, no tape. Right? Unless I'm completely off here and this nightclub doesn't, in fact, have security cameras. But that would be crazy because as a person who's worked in the restaurant industry literally forever, even at a normal bar, they're security cameras.
Oh, every restaurant I've ever worked at.
Specifically for that. No tape. Zeke hasn't come out and said, this is ridiculous. No one from his only sources from, I mean, literally Adam Schefter has tweeted out things like, they're just trying to get him. So they're just going to them for, Jerry's not really saying anything. And the whole line, the company line is, well, he'll grow up and he'll mature and this thing will be in the past. And listen to that. That is, we've seen that a bunch Absolutely. Of times with players, and that is very true. I don't see that happen with this guy, though. I mean, like, he's just they're in a point where they're just kind of enabling him.
Yeah, well, see, that's the point. Really, the point is, if he's not going to get in trouble for anything, why would he stop doing it?
They protected Dez Bryant when he first came into the league, and he matured, and they're like, okay,
Michael
no
Irvin.
More of this stuff. We're putting literally security guys around. You have a curfew. You have all this stuff.
Michael
you
Irvin don't meet back anywhere. In the day. I mean, that like Michael Irvin had well-documented issues early in his career. He's talked about it himself, and he, look, he's turned out to be, like, he's fine. Michael Irvin really got it together.
Absolutely,
so, like, it can happen, but you need to, at some point, there needs to be some sort of you know, you have to be responsible for your actions at some point, or else you will never learn to stop doing those actions.
Let's go to James real quickly in New Mexico. James, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
Good, man.
Yeah, so I'm surprised none of these Dallas players have taken the advice from Chris Carter, where you got to have your
fall guy.
That's right. This is classic just not having your fall guy. So, you know, you got to find somebody out there. But, I live in eastern New Mexico, and it's basically just West Texas and flat and boring. So, it's just the mindset of the Dallas fans is truly a wonder to see and to watch out here.
Yeah, I will be slightly fair, because if this was happening in Philadelphia – I think there would be a lot of defense. Well, it's like, well, hey, we don't know. And there would be the same lines of like, wait for the facts to come out. But this is, I mean, we're pretty much all the way there by this point.
Even when Shady had his thing, everyone was kind of like,
Yeah, with PYT and all that. not tipping and all. No. But we knew that he wasn't that great of a guy.
Yeah, but hey, he put up numbers.
Exactly. We appreciate the call, James.
That should be the tagline for the NFL.
Hey, he put up numbers.
He's not that great a guy, but he put up numbers.
Speaking of New Mexico, let's stay there and let's go to our good friend David. What's happening, buddy? Good to hear from you.
Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic, sir.
Two calls from the state of New Mexico in the space of 15 minutes.
How about that?
I think I'm running for mayor. So what's going on here?
Yeah, you guys should hook up and get together. That's what I'm saying.
New Mexico BGN club out there.
In the fact, there's only three of us out here.
What's on your mind, David?
Two things. One, this whole Dallas Cowboy thing has always been an absolute mess. And I've been telling Cowboy fans, since I've been out here when Zeke's getting in trouble, this is a pattern of behavior. He had this problem in college. Mm-hmm. He's not going to grow up. And the reason why a lot of the players who have problems and actually grew out of them and actually learned their lessons, because somewhere along the line, there was a consequence.
Yes.
Somewhere along the line, some money was taken from them. Somewhere along the line, they missed some games.
Yes.
Until this happens to Zeke, you know, it's all going to be swept under the rug. And you know what? I want him to play. I want him to play because when we beat the shit out of Dallas, I don't want any excuses. All right.
Dump. That was just, I know we get a little fired up there, but
We can do it on the podcast.
You can do it on the podcast. Can't do it on the radio.
David, great caller, too, though. Yes, keep calling. We love you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That was just, that actually shocked me. That
I was like,
but the fury,
whoa,
the fury and the fire.
I loved it because he's like, I want a yo, man.
We all want the same thing.
Yeah, David, we all, even though no one else out there in the radio heard it, hopefully, we all agree with you and we want to do that, too.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what, actually, that's what we kind of wanted to finish off with. So get this in your mind, too, because I feel that way about any of these teams in the NFC East. I want them to be good. But I want the Eagles to be better than them. And we had a question on the podcast that I thought was it's going to be a 2-on-1 fight, and I'm ready for it. But, like, would you rather it just, like, the Eagles plow through this division and have it 99-05 and just going to have that? Or would you want it like the 90s and the MCs being a little tougher and having them being on top? I mean, obviously, no, I don't want to repeat like the disappointing Buddy Ryan era.
You want to see all the other teams in the division win a Super Bowl again? That sounds great. Take that risk again.
Got the best defense in the NFL, but here's Phil Simms winning a Super Bowl. Sorry. No, I don't want that either, but I'm just saying, all right. Let's go to Matt in San Francisco. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Thanks, man. Good.
I just wanted to bring up, because we're coming up on a year of when Teddy Bridgewater went down and how that really set everything up. Not only, a son in Bradford back out there, but we get the first round pick, which we get Derek Barnett. Mm-hmm. And then Alshon Jeffrey would never have signed with us if Bradford was, going into this season.
Yeah, because he denied him. He denied him from Minnesota.
I'm not going there.
Yeah, I am.
Despite the terms and all that.
That's just crazy to think about, a year, how that one injury really set us up for where we're going now, and then that pick is Barnett too. So we got, it's just crazy to think back on that a year from now.
Yeah, I think I think if this team becomes, if for some reason this team wins the Super Bowl, that's going to be, everybody's going to turn to that point right there of just like, oh my gosh. And then this happened. It'll be like Minnesota does it again. look what they did. They gave him a mini little, they gave him a freaking, a player that's going to be around for the next, 8 years. And it was because they really wanted Sam Bradford.
Rick Spielman does it again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pretty interesting, man. Are you getting pumped for the season?
Yeah, really. So, born and raised in New Jersey, been out here for 6 years now, but I'm so hesitant, though, kind of where we're going now. The running back situation does scare me. I don't have a lot of faith in when Patriots players go like Blunt. They normally don't do that well when they're on their new teams. And, he had that history with the Steelers when he went there, and that didn't work out. So I'm kind of, I think we're putting a little too much faith in him in particular.
Yeah, man. We discussed that a little bit. I don't really disagree. I think it's a little overblown, that narrative.
I think Bill Belichick has definitely let players go who played well at other places. Chandler Jones was pretty freaking awesome this past season.
And he's definitely had people that have come in and haven't been great. Don't you dare say Eric Rowe yet.
I was going to say Albert Haynesworth. I think Eric Rowe's a star.
We will still take your phone calls. Mark and Dan, hang on line. And as we flip and go into our last few segments, we want to talk about Washington's offseason, too. Plus, we're going to have fun with home run calls as a little side bonus. It's BGN Radio on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Dear Washington fans, stop giving Dan Snyder money. Stop it. This is not me attacking you. This is not me just saying, the Eagles are the best-run organization in the world. They are messing with your Sundays, and you're paying for them.
Yep.
I have never seen a franchise in the history of franchises go, we're going to dump all of these picks into this number one quarterback in RG3. And it, as an insurance policy, just in case that doesn't work out, let's strengthen up, and maybe if he's good enough, we can flip him anyway if RG3's good, and if he's not, then maybe he can be something in Kurt Coupons. Kirk Cousins is your fourth-round pick. You drafted two quarterbacks in the same year, and neither one of them, and the one guy that's in your insurance policy, look, I don't think he's the greatest quarterback in the world, but he's what's needed. What is your plan? What are you doing? Are you going to tag him for close to $30 million next year? Like, he is walking away. And I have never seen a franchise be as disheveled as what's going down in Washington.
Yeah, John, maybe, you know, it's not the best idea to smear your GM as an alcoholic and, like, smear him on the way out the door. And then, I don't know, not have a general manager for the draft or the offseason or any of that stuff. When you've got your, you know, most important decision as a franchise in Kirk Coupons that you've had in, I don't know, since trading everything you have for RG3. So, like, yeah, I don't know, maybe not, you know, crapping on your GM and pushing him out the door because you don't like to cede control to anybody.
I've never ever seen publicly anybody from a franchise come out and go, we gave you a ton of money and you said, and your agent said, no, I don't think so. And we're not going to have a count. What PR strategy are they doing down there?
The bad one, the not good. They're doing the
Dan Snyder one,
the damage control one.
Yeah,
the one where when he inevitably leaves, they can at least be like, "Well, we tried," but the problem with that is like, no, you didn't. You just made yourself look worse.
Yeah, and again, I can't get over, like, we talked about it on the podcast on the air when it was happening. I was joking a little before, but it almost felt criminal what they did to Scott McLuhan on the way out. Whatever issues that dude had, like, how they played that was about as ugly as any organization I've ever seen play something like that. Like, it was outrageous what they did to that guy, especially considering that he was, like, the one guy in the building who knew football. So, I got nothing. I can't even, like, I'm speechless when it comes to Washington.
I welcome.
And they're so racist.
Yeah. I welcome everyone in Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, wherever you are. Come on up, man.
Yeah, we'll
I'm opening up the doors. Like, I know we're not the greatest in the world, and sure, you got the Super Bowls, and it's just like everybody else in this damn league, and you got to deal with that stuff, but our doors are open. So this is the first time that I would like to welcome in all the Washington fans to Philadelphia.
It's not fair to them.
If you want to jump, I mean, it is really not fair to you guys.
I feel for them.
I know it would be hard to come to us because the rivals for, but seriously, just pick another team.
Yeah,
everybody else will say that's okay because this is insane. I can't believe that, you know, as much as we'll crap on the Cowboys and whatever, and like, I can't believe the NFL's not stepping in. NFL, why aren't you stepping in? Seriously. Yeah. Like, I'm more concerned about that for the, it blows my mind that you're just going to give it to some rich white SOB that could literally pee on everybody's face and everybody be like, oh, that was great. I'd like more season tickets.
He already is doing that.
It's amazing
to me.
He is
peeing on their faces.
Let's go to Mark in Collegeville real quick. Mark, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, fellas, what's up?
What up, Mark?
What's up, Seltzer?
What's going on, man?
Not much, man. How's Portland?
It was awesome, man.
By the way, speaking of Portland, you hung out with one of our Patreon subscribers our listeners.
Not my real emails. Yeah. John, my guy.
John Boyle.
We had a blast.
All right, well, I just want to touch on a couple things real quick. I mean, one thing is, you know, the whole thing with Peterson, everybody, you know, already wants to put doubt on him and everything like that and say that after this year, if he doesn't do anything, he should go. Standard thing with head coaches is, you know, first year, you know, they're brand new, they're getting into the role. Second year, you know, they're feeling out from what they had the first year and trying to piece together everything to put something together. And then usually the third year is the year that they decide on whether or not they're going to keep him or not. So everyone coming down on Peterson for this year, you know, I think they should cut him a little slack. I mean, he's working off of what Chip Kelly destroyed from the previous year. He's now trying to work with a team that they're trying to piece together for him. So, I mean, as far as Peterson, you know, I think they should cut him a little slack, at least until next season, to see what he can really pull out because he's still fitting into the role. He's still new at it.
Yeah, Mark, see? Tell James.
Yeah, did you pay Mark to call?
I did.
I think his point holds water, but it's more the point that, like, yes, that used to be the way it worked in the NFL, but now the cycle is just quicker, man. Like, you just don't have as much time.
Yeah, and it's just I hope that's not a reality of me and us being Eagles fans just sitting here going like, ugh, Here we go again. We're turning into the Browns or what, or not anymore. I don't even know who to tag anymore. We're turning into Washington. No, that'll never happen. But still, you know, I don't know. I just hope it, you know, kind of eases up here. All right, that's, we're going to wrap things up. But before we go,
yes,
I'm going to jump into another sport because Aaron Judge is, man, I know he's a Yankee, but like, he hit a towering home run last night.
Swung on, there it goes, deep left.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
It's a producing
there we go.
Fail.
Swung on, there it goes, deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Upper deck, a tremendous home run for Aaron Judge. It is a Judgian blast.
Oh, oh.
All rise. Here comes the Judge.
No, you're burying the lead. You're burying the lead.
A Judgian home run.
There are so many different home run calls that would work. I mean, like, can we just get to a point where, I mean, there are so many different puns that we can go in. For instance, you know, like, oh, yeah, Jack, can you play the little, just give me the baseball hit, and then I'll go from there. There's a long drive. All rise as Aaron Judge has just handed that baseball a subpoena. It's gone. You know, can we get to the? Can we do the over the top stuff
voice
there, James?
That is so good. I will try. Not with the power, but I will give me the hit. The judge's verdict is in, and that ball is out of here.
Wait, that doesn't make sense either. That ball is guilty.
Yeah, well, that's Paul's guilty.
Oh, it's out of here. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the verdict is in. It's out of here. It's gone.
Oh,
it's
the verdict home. Is out
I said,
of here.
The verdict is in. The ball's out of here.
Oh, my goodness.
Get out of here.
BLG, you got to call.
Could have gone guilty, too. That would have been good. I didn't want to step on BLG's.
I got to get the hit.
Yeah. One more time.
That ball is guilty as charged.
Yeah, see,
it is high. So many
different little puns.
My favorite, real quick, my favorite thing about John Sterling is when he goes, and this doesn't happen with Aaron Judge home runs because they're all like 10,000 feet long, but when I'll do the, it is high, it is far, it is caught in shallow left field. That happens three times a game with John Sterling. It's the best.
Listen, this is how a true pro does it here.
Tremendo pelotazo, una línea del bate de Torres. Oh, por el center field y olvídala. ¿Dónde cae la pelota? Esta se va al parque de monumentos.
Yes.
¡Échale sazón! Eso es un jorrón. El juez declara culpable.
Yes, tell them.
El juez declara culpable.
Tres carreras.
Tell them, Ricky Ricardo.
25 para Aaron Judge. Yankees adelante 5-1 por el jardín central.
Listen, Ricky Ricardo, who is my radio father, that's how you do it. Well
that's
done, sir.
That's how you do it. That's
there
a home run call right there.
Folks, it's been a fantastic show. Thank you to Sue Schilling for the updates. And, of course, Jack Fritz producing Behind the Board. I am John Barchett for James Seltzer, Brandon Lee Gout. And this has been BGN Radio right here on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Thank you.